Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Chris Stashew.
I'm Mike White.
And this is Father Malone.
And we are the hosts of Dreams for Sale, a once-a-month look at the only Twilight Zone reboot worth watching, quoting Father Malone, and I would agree with him 100%, Twilight Zone 1985. On every episode of this show, we talk about one episode of the show, which are normally broken into 2 to 3 segments. On this episode, we're going to be talking about the 14th episode of the show, which aired January 3rd, 1986. It is broken into 3 segments: Still Life, The Little People of Killeney Woods, and The Misfortune Cookie.
Ancient maps included unknown lands labeled Terra Incognita and warnings like, "Here there be tigers." Modern maps of an enlightened world show no such disclaimers. Perhaps they should. Perhaps even today, there are realms which cannot be charted anywhere outside the Twilight Zone.
So Still Life is directed by Peter Medak, written by Garrett Graham and Chris Hubble. It stars Robert Carradine, John Carradine's son, David Carradine's brother, star of Revenge of the Nerds, a film that has aged insanely poorly. And it also stars John Carradine, Robert Carradine's father. And it's not good. I mean, I don't know what else to say. No one else is going to say anything, so I will be the first one to say...
Go. Yeah, you never take the lead. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Aborigine folk stories translated into Amazonian rainforest characters that then come to life seems almost more like an X-Files premise than a premise for the Twilight Zone, because it goes nowhere. It stops and ends the same spot it began. Nowhere.
So he finds a camera, what, at a yard sale or something?
Yeah, so this episode is literally that first joke from Zoolander turned into a segment. The Aborigines thought that if you took a picture of them, it stole their soul. What would happen if that were actually the case? Let's find out. And so Robert Carradine finds a camera that has pictures of Aborigines from the rainforest, so Amazonian indigenous people, and his wife lets them out by accident in their house, and he has to figure out a way to get them back in the camera, which is literally just taking pictures of them. It's as exciting as it sounds.
Oh, well, can I just say that I actually like this one.
Our silence here for you should be obvious.
I know. Listen, I know the joke from Zoolander is out there, but, you know, this idea that Aboriginal tribes, like, you know, did not want their photograph taken because they believed that it would capture their soul, or just the idea of any sort of filmic thing, like, you know, accomplishing that, I think is a potent premise.
I agree.
I liked the idea that we had this camera that had the souls of these people, and that it was tucked away for many years, and then when they developed the film, those souls were released. I liked that, and I liked the sort of end segment of the thing where the way to defeat them is to snap their photograph and pull them back in. Okay, so maybe I'm liking the premise more than the execution, because I think I'm on record here on this podcast talking about Peter Medak and his cinema style. I think he's awful. I think this episode is directed horribly, just like Dead Woman's Shoes and whatever the fuck else he contributed to this show. Like, I think he has no idea of pace, and the way he shoots coverage for people talking is kind of insane. Like, conversations were going on in this particular episode where, like, I liked what was being said and I liked the performances in it. For some reason, the way it's shot and edited made me think it was the most boring thing on earth. So I think if there's a problem in the episode, I'm going to lay it at Peter Medak's feet, because I do like the concept of it. But I can see where you guys did not enjoy it. Maybe you'd like to jump in and contradict me.
It was just kind of middle of the road for me. Like, it felt like a very familiar premise, not just the Zoolander thing. I mean, because I had heard that much before Zoolander, which is weird that there was actually a time before Zoolander. I know usually cinema is divided up before Zoolander and after Zoolander.
Boy, you're just going to just throw my ass right under the bus, huh? It's fine. I'll remember that next time we talk about, I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but...
Fuck you guys, okay?
I like
what
the,
did I do to you, huh?
I like
Mike,
the
I'm
idea.
Right there with you. I felt a little bit insulted that that was how we were addressing this particular myth, is based on Zoolander.
I was being facetious, you fucking turds. I'm just saying, of the things I've ever heard it in, Zoolander is the thing that sticks out to me the most.
Well, for me, it's Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
There's a throwaway joke about it.
I like the idea of it. I like the whole idea of the lost expedition. I like when he goes to John Carradine and he's just like, oh yeah, nobody, you know, he was the only one to make it out alive or something. So that whole idea, I'm just like, okay, that's spooky. That's kind of scary. That's good. But yeah, you're right. It just kind of lands with a thud as far as the way it was directed. And it's like, it goes on for a little too long. And when the Amazonians are attacking, I don't feel like they're as much of a threat as they probably should be. And it just didn't feel like there's many stakes in this. It's like, had they killed the family dog or something, it would have been a little bit better, I think.
Well, and the thing about it is that, in my mind, is the real issue of this segment, is that the original Twilight Zone and Twilight Zone 2000, and Mike, I know you had watched more of this than Father Malone has, and I know Father Malone has a very low opinion of it. The 2000 Twilight Zone seems really cynical, and the 1985 is Twilight Zone is not cynical enough sometimes. In my mind, there should have been some comeuppance for the character of Robert Carradine, because he's, you know, as Marcus Brody says in Last Crusade, you're meddling with things you can't even understand. And that there's no punishment for his character. He gets away scot-free, and so does his girlfriend. I thought there was going to be, or his wife, there should have been some kind of comeuppance or some kind of cautionary tale to this. And I know that the narration has this kind of, you know, oh, you know, be careful, there's weird things out there. But, like, there's nothing happens in this episode that isn't immediately undone at the end. No one learns anything other than don't open cameras from the Amazon.
Yeah, I think you're right. This probably would have made a halfway decent filler X-Files episode, but as a Twilight Zone episode, I'm just like, okay. Because, had that happened, then those Amazons would have killed some people, and then Mulder and Scully would have come out to investigate what the hell was going on.
Right. I mean, if it were me, the way I would have had it end is, and this is the way I thought it was going to end, when she took a picture of the Amazonian attacking Robert Carradine at the end, I thought they were both going to get trapped in the camera. And then, like,
that would
be
nice.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that, but it's like, it was like, even on Wikipedia, the still from Still Life is the Amazonian trying to stab Robert Carradine and her taking a picture of it. That would have been the logical ending, is like, now they're both trapped and they can't do anything about it.
That would have been very Twilight Zone. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and it's like, that's
Rod Serling would have done that, yeah.
Right, and that's what I don't understand, is the original Twilight Zone, it had kind of, it wasn't cynical the way 2000 was, but it did have that kind of be careful what you wish for mentality, be careful what you wish for, be careful what you're going to, you know, you may not get what you want, even if you do get what you want, there's always a catch. And that's what the original Twilight Zone had. And then the 2000s is too cynical, and this show has it, but it sometimes doesn't feel like it does it in the right spots. And this was a spot where it really should have hit you with that, like that cynicism, that teaching moment.
Had Robert Carradine been like, this is it. Oh my gosh, we can sell this to National Geographic and make tons of money, because we all know that National Geographic is just swimming in money. But had he had some sort of ulterior motive, or because he's just a dude, and he's like, oh, okay, yeah, oh, here's this thing. Well, that's kind of neat. All right. You know, it's just he's nothing. He has no personality, and he's just like, okay, cool, that's great.
Yeah, he plays it really laconically.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And I agree with both of you guys. Like, you know, I don't necessarily need to have Robert Carradine sucked into the camera, although that would be the best outcome for this particular segment. But there should have been at least some stakes. Like you said, Mike, like, had there been a family pet that got killed, or a neighbor who was visiting and got
right.
killed, something
yeah.
would have been... You know, to up the ante of it. And even if you had that, with like, you know, like a neighbor comes over and gets killed, and then they have to explain it to the police, and now, oh no, what's going to happen here in the Twilight Zone? Something. It needed right. to be a little bit darker, which is, it kind of wanted to be.
Or turn it into a comedy, and it's the mother-in-law that's over, and the one of the
Amazonians kills her. Oh my God, that would have been great.
Her, yeah. And then they can be happy at the end of it.
Yeah. Something.
Yeah, I don't think it was like I don't think it was really bad. I just feel more like a missed opportunity again. And I think that's really what we've kind of had a reoccurring theme of our problems with this show so far, is aside from several episode segments being just genuinely not great, most of the time it's just meh. I mean, they could have done some things differently that would have made this a little bit more interesting or a little bit more exciting.
I mean, I'm glad that the writing staff weren't completely hung up on the idea of we have to have a twist, or we have to have sort of a nasty spin at the end. But it does feel like the majority of the staff were never interested in doing that anyway. It doesn't seem like a conscious choice. They seem to be more sentimental than the original Twilight Zone, certainly more sentimental than what we've gotten recently. And to some degree, it seems that might be a conscious choice on whoever was running the show at the time, Philip Daguerre, I believe, to distance themselves from the original Twilight Zone. Like, they were going to have stories that the twist is that everything turns out okay, but it doesn't make for great drama. So, like a beautiful failure, let's say.
Well, and we know what the Twilight Zone's expectations are, is that there's going to be a twist. I mean, you know, Father Malone, you and I do a Tales from the Crypt podcast cross promo, but every episode of that show doesn't necessarily have a twist ending. And when it's not, it is kind of better because it feels like it's breaking its own mold. But with that show, there's less stories per season, and this show... We're still in the first season. We still have a little ways to go in the first season. And there are so many stories that there does need to be more of a variance, but there needs to be a better execution with the variance.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Its strength is also its weakness. The fact that they've taken it to an hour length and then broken it up so we get two or three stories as opposed to the one should lend itself to... As you said, telling more varied stories. Like, you know, we can deal with a story that completely fucks with our heads opening, and then give us one that's kind of comedic, or give us one that's a little bit sentimental. But they have not committed in any way the stories that lend themselves more specifically to a bit of a nastier bite at the end. They don't quite commit to it, and that's kind of a drag.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to the next segment. The Little People of Killarney Woods.
In the days to come, when human beings navigate the great depths of space, they'll eventually come to a small planet in a distant galaxy. It's a pleasant place, but quite unlike the Earth. There's one unusual similarity, however. Shamrocks grow there in great profusion. Brought, they say, by one Liam O'Shaughnessy, lately of Earth, and now residing in one of the greener corners of the Twilight Zone.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. Come on down to the pub. We're going to talk about the leprechauns. Oh, my God.
Yeah, let me jump in here. I'll take the lead on this particular one, because I am nearly 100% Irish, and I grew up in Boston around all the Irish people here in America. And I think we were sick of this stereotype of Irish people before it had become anything. This entire segment. Look, it's not even a good story. Let me get that right
out
of the way.
Wait. Aliens as leprechauns is not a good story? What misdirection?
How dare they? Exactly. It is okay. The story is lame. The execution's kind of okay. I like a lot of the actors we've got here, but it's okay. As I said, I'm Irish. I grew up in Boston, so this to me is as offensive as any film that's set in Boston, where you've got actors who are like, hey, you're going to be playing this part and it's going to be Boston, or hey, you're going to be playing this part and it's going to be Irish. They're like, oh, I can trot out my brogue or my sort of Bostonian accent. Like, just look, the accents themselves are kind of credible, but like the sort of intent with the writing, that's just sort of like, I don't know anything about Ireland other than what I've seen from movies from the 1940s and 50s, and I'm just going to plug that back in here. Like this sort of like, oh, going down to the pub, oh hey, how's it going? I saw the little people today, don't you know? Like it.
Oh, let me tell you, they're out there with the little shamrock dance. Like, oh my God.
Oh, I need a bit of whiskey for my throat, you know, because that's the other thing we do as Irish people. All we do is drink. So let me weave in the fucking leprechauns, and let me weave in the brogue and the mysticism of Ireland. And I'm down at the pub and I'm getting drunk with all my friends. Like, I don't know, man. This episode can go fuck itself.
Whoa.
Sorry.
Whoa, man.
No, you know what? Like,
no, I get it. Dude. I don't know. It is like, it's not. Yeah, it's not offensive. It's just fucking stupid. It's just stereotypes into the ground.
It is. But you know what? Like, I maybe I'm taking this a little bit personally because I sort of tend to. I mean, my threshold for sort of Irish bullshit is very thin, and this caters to every fucking single one of them, man. I mean, the fact that they weren't eating potatoes at one point is kind of shocking.
I was expecting them to literally be munching on a potato, just like holding a potato, eating it at the table.
Corned beef and cabbage.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking A.
Oh, let me tell you something, boy. I was like, oh man, it is. It's shockingly tone deaf even for 1986.
Yeah.
And I think the weirder part about all of this is, how many of these actors are Irish? None of them?
Zero.
Oh, by the way, yeah. Hal Landon Jr., otherwise known as Captain Logan from Bill and Ted's, trots out his Irish accent.
What are we talking about here, fellas? Now, he was down at the shop the other day, I believe. Oh, fuck you. God. And you know what? I'm sorry, but I really like him. Like,
he's a great
I enjoy
actor.
Him in Bill and Ted. Yeah, like, I'm not trying to ding any of the actors involved. I think they did what they could with this horrifically dated and boring material.
It's not good.
Is it the worst thing we've seen so far?
You know what? Little Boy Lost, man. Little Boy Lost.
Yeah.
Is even more offensive somehow.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Because I think Little Boy Lost still takes the cake.
Mm.
Yeah, man. Like, as much as I was offended being Irish as I am, like, you look at it and just you can kind of shrug it off and go just like, this is so tone deaf and stupid. Like Little Boy Lost is offensive on a whole other level of what was actually going on in America at the time. You know, this is just a trifle. That was about a serious issue that it had no concept of what was actually important in that argument.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I'm not Irish. I'm part Ukrainian and part Italian. I mean, I'm not offended, and I could understand where you would be, Father Malone. But like, it's just not funny because it's trying to be. It is ultimately, I think, I don't know, maybe I misinterpreted it. It's a comedic episode segment.
It's trying to be.
Yeah, but it's not funny.
Right. It's not fun. It's not funny.
No. And like, there's a twist of. The little people are aliens who fly around in a dick-shaped spaceship.
Oh, such a good effect at the end too. Just the cherry on the cake of this beautiful Irish breakfast.
Yeah.
How many mixed metaphors were in there?
It's not good. It's really bad. And I kind of feel bad for everyone involved because someone coming to me and going, you're going to have to do this really goofy Irish accent, but it's serious though. So
God bless them, everyone.
Oh, God. Boy, we should just be watching Angela's Ashes to get the taste of this out of our mouths. You know, just...
Oh, that's pretty bad, too.
Yeah. So let's move on to the final segment of the episode, The Misfortune Cookie.
Check, please, for Mr. Harry Folger, for whom the phrase dim sum is not merely a description, but a damnation. A man who finds himself sitting down to a single, never-ending course of just desserts, prepared for him in the kitchens of the Twilight Zone.
So The Misfortune Cookie is directed by Alan Arkush. It's written by friend of Dreams for Sale, Rockne S. O'Bannon, though it is credited as Stephen Ray. It is based on The Misfortune Cookie by Charles E. Fritch, and it stars one of Mike White, if not Mike White's favorite people in Hollywood, Mr. Elliot Gould.
And his amazing mustache.
Mother of God. Whew, boy.
This entire episode not just trafficking in stereotype? Was this the stereotype episode? Like, they just went like, let's take all of these stories and put them together and just cram it on out there.
Yeah.
Just get this out of the way.
Yeah, no, it's... we go from stereotypes of Irish to New Yorker assholes.
Well, I think maybe Father Malone was talking about the Asian characters.
Oh, well. Oh.
Goddamn right I was.
I don't know what you're talking about. You mean Asian people don't just bring out fortune cookies that have weird platitudes on them all the time? Wait,
When I was in China, that was the thing that I kept saying is, where are them damn fortune cookies? I couldn't get that. I couldn't get an egg roll. I couldn't get nothing.
And then bing, bing, bing. God.
Man, they eat all kinds of weird shit over there, like chicken knees and stuff.
Where the fuck is my orange chicken? You guys got any of that peanut butter chicken?
Did I tell you about the guy in the hotel who was throwing a fit because he couldn't get orange juice at breakfast time?
Orange juice?
Yeah. You work in this hotel? You work in this hotel? Where's the orange juice? I need some orange juice. Oh, yeah.
Was he by any chance American?
Oh, he was... very ugly and very American.
Are you one of them there fat American fucks? Because you give us asshole Americans a bad name. God. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it because I was still trying to figure out what psycho wrote the last episode segment. This is very much... You know, what was the segment called? Wong's Lost and Found Emporium? You remember how that didn't trade in stereotypes somehow? This made up for it. Like,
oh boy,
wholeheartedly.
Doesn't it? Now, that being said, Elliot Gould's performance is really good. Mike, I did not know your affection for Elliot Gould. I also have a great affection for Elliot Gould.
Oh, yeah.
And this is unlike anything I've seen him do, like fully committed to this character. He is really fun. In the episode, it's unfortunate that the rest of the episode is just weighted down with these tired, old, dated, stereotypical nonsense. Because his critic is so fun. I don't know. I loved his performance in it, but then I'm just a fan of the guy.
And another tie back to Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Al Leong is in this episode, who's always great and everything, though he's pretty much given nothing to do.
Yeah, he's just kind of like in the background. I'm like, is that Al Leong? And then he's credited as what, like Albert or something, or Alvin? I was just like, that, okay, sure.
Hey, look, it's Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and I love Alan Arkush. I mean, director of so many good things, especially Rock and Roll High School. And so I was just like, I was really expecting a lot out of this episode, and some of it delivered, some of it didn't. I mean, the fortunes that were going to show up in the fortune cookies. I was like, okay, yeah, I got it. I understand what's going on here.
Yeah, but I don't understand the payoff of the episode. He is magically transported to a land where all there is Chinese food.
Yeah. And then he has to only eat Chinese food for all eternity. That's his hell.
Is that...
Yeah, that what, like, I want to do that right now.
Yeah, what blue hell is this, and like, how can I get there?
What the fuck?
I know, really. God, I would love that.
This episode is exactly the opposite to Still Life, as far as I'm concerned. I, too, like you said, Mike, I think Alan Arkus is a fucking tremendous talent. I think he's underutilized. Get Crazy is one of my favorite movies of all time. I think he does a creditable job. I think it's like, I think Peter Medak just like deadened that particular episode where the script was good and he kind of tamped it down. I think the script for this, much as I love you, Mr. Rockne O'Bannon, and we did talk about this in our interview with him, like, you know, he did take his name off of it, though he said it was just kind of like, why not? I'll just do that. I'll put my, because I have a pen name, let me throw it out there. But I think he took it off because he recognized that it ended up being as bad as we're saying. I think the script is bad. I think everything else is pretty good. I think, you know, like, I think everyone's doing a good job, basically. It's just that the script is so hamstrung and stupid that it ends up being a failure.
Well, and again, like, I don't have a whole lot of issues with most... Well, I take that back. I think most of the episode just kind of falls flat. And then, again, the ending to me is just... If you're going to suspend disbelief, you got to have shown that you were going to do that the entire time. Because all of a sudden he's just transported to a magical land and there's never been other magic in this episode. So it feels a little out of place. And then the closing narration is also strange. For whom the phrase dim sum is not a description, but a damnation.
Right.
Well, he wasn't even eating dim sum. Like, this... Guys, if you're going to start making jokes, like, make a joke that makes sense.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, and as you've said, like the comeuppance as it is to me a benefit. Like,
yeah,
what is the actual comeuppance for a food critic? Like, you know, shouldn't he have been at a fucking Denny's at the end? Like,
see, I don't know. Like, it to me feels like to talk about another pop culture thing, that episode of The Simpsons where Homer is just sitting, that Treehouse of Horrors where Homer is just being force fed donuts, like.
More.
Yeah. I thought when it's like, you're going to die, I was honestly anticipating him walking into the middle of the street and getting, like, run over or something. But it's like, no, he's just going to be in this kind of weird purgatory where I thought he was already dead eating Chinese food.
Yeah. Give him McDonald's for the rest of his life. If he's some sort of hoity-toity food critic, give him some real shit to eat. Or maybe literal shit. It suddenly turns into Salo, 120 Days with Sodom. Gets real dark.
What the fuck?
Manja!
I also do like, because I haven't gotten to see him in enough things, I do like that Frederick Coffin is in this. Playing against normal type of, like, a weird scumbag character. He's, like, the one voice of reason, like, why are you such a dick, dude?
Right.
Yeah, this episode, these three segments have been...
A delight.
A true deluge, a true fecal deluge. So, on that note, we are going to be talking about on the next episode of Dreams for Sale, the 15th episode of Twilight Zone 1985, that is also broken into three segments, Monsters! Exclamation point, A Small Talent for War, and A Matter of Minutes.
Hmm.
One of those is written by Rockne O'Bannon. Just one.
And two are not.
And two aren't. Until then, where can people find you, Mike White?
Find me over at the Barney Miller Podcast, which is also known as The Life and Times of Captain Barney Miller. It's a whole new thing we're doing, Chris. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
I just wandered into it one day, and you're like, we're recording this podcast. And I was like, okay, cool.
That's it. I just took you down to the 12th precinct, three in the cell. It was me and Fish and Jack Sue. And yeah, it was just crazy. So
how can Jack Sue be there if you are Jack Sue?
Oh, that's true. That's true. It was me and some Chinese food and my bookie.
It's true.
Mushy mushy. Anyway, yeah, I do that. And then every week I'm working on the projection booth, which is available at projectionboothpodcast.com.
What about you, Father Malone?
You can check me out over on my YouTube channel, Ott5 Films. I got a show called You've Never Seen about cult movies and movies that are not getting
enough
love.
Which is just such a lie. I've seen so many
We've
of those
seen
movies.
Your movies, bro.
So many.
I posted a comment on your YouTube channel telling you I saw it, bro.
You sure did. let me speak to that for a second. I got another one like 2 days ago, and a guy said like, "Hey man, I have seen this movie, but your video's awesome." And I was like, "Yeah, that's how you do it." Anyway,
do you remember that day, Father Malone, where I was like, "I left you something," and you were like, "Yeah, you're being vague. That's what I left you."
Oh, I know. And it took me forever to figure out that that's what it was.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you can also hear me over on Chronicles from the Crypt, a show Chris and I co-host about the HBO television series Tales from the Crypt. Go check that one out. And I guess you can hear me on the Culture Cast every once in a while.
It's true. I've seen it. I've heard it. I'm part of it. Speaking of the Culture Cast, that's where you can find me when I'm not here. Culture Cast, also one season show where you talk about shows that lasted only one season. Jesus.
Just one.
I guess there are ways shows could last less than a season.
Oh, yeah. Pan Am.
Kitchen Confidential technically only aired for 3 episodes. So there you go. Yeah, so you can find me there, here, and the other spot at Twilight Zone 85 on Twitter. Dreams, Jesus Christ, TwilightZone85.com is where you can find more episodes of this show, which we do once a month. Big thanks to Roxy Drive and Neutron Dreams for the music for Dreams for Sale, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
And we'll catch you on the flip side.